This podcast is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management, award-winning wealth managers who go above and beyond to support and guide you. Visit candowealth.com to start building your wealth with confidence.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Isabel Hardman and James Forsyth. It is day three of conference, and we have heard from the Home Secretary, among others. But to kick off the day, Boris Johnson embarked on a broadcast round. Isabel, how would you say that went for him?
I don't think he's cheered up since his broadcast interviews on Sunday. He got very tetchy, not necessarily about all the same things, but he was asked similar questions about, you know, shortages and so on, to the extent that Nick Robinson actually told him, Prime Minister, stop, and tried to get him to actually answer the questions rather than, as James says in his blog on Coffee House, just bulldoze his way through the interview, stopping any awkward questions from being asked. So that made the interview even tetchier. I mean, it is a difficult backdrop for him to be giving interviews because there are a lot of things going wrong. And at party conference, you want to give the impression that your party in government is totally on top of everything, which actually is not Boris Johnson's policy. Part of his policy towards these supply chain problems is to say, not our problem, this is your problem, pay people more.
Yeah, it's curious, James. In some of the interviews Boris Johnson has been doing, he's been pressed on inflation in relation to this, you know, pivot the government have done, where they're talking about how job shortages mean higher wages, a crisis could actually become quite a good thing. And Boris Johnson is playing down inflation, suggesting there's often talk of this and he doesn't see it as a serious threat. Is that the correct reading?
I think that was the biggest hostage to fortune I've heard Boris Johnson give in an interview in quite some time, because today the price of gas in the UK has reached what the equivalent of it, to put it in terms of a barrel of oil, would be $230 for a barrel of oil as an equivalent of what the gas price is. It is hard not to believe that this is going to have inflationary consequences. You know, one of the things that triggered the great inflation of the 70s was the 73 oil price shock. We are looking at a big rise in gas prices. We are looking at a clear shortage. You've got the Chinese government instructing Chinese state-owned firms to procure gas at essentially almost any price. And the gas pricing is rising, not just in the UK, but across Europe. Gas prices are rising very rapidly. And it is hard not to see how that will be inflationary. Now, Boris Johnson is right that at various points people have warned of big spikes in inflation. They haven't materialised. You know, do you remember when the government, when the Bank of England embarked on QE after the 2008 financial crisis? Lots of people were convinced that this would lead to very high inflation. Instead, it led to asset price inflation. But because this money mostly went on repairing banks' balance sheets, it didn't have quite the inflationary effect as was expected. I think this time around, though, we are looking at lots of the conditions are in place for high inflation. So the COVID-related QE went directly into what one might term the real economy because it went onto furlough and other COVID support schemes. You've got a huge amount of liquidity sloshing around the global financial system. You've got the US president trying to pass a really big stimulus bill. That would have another effect. And you've got this big rise in energy prices. Then on top of that, in the UK, you've got wages rising because of a labour shortage. Now, Boris Johnson's argument is, what's not to like about wages rising? You know, one of the reasons people voted for Brexit, he argues, is that wages have been stagnant for too long, and that if this labour shortage is forcing firms to pay more, that is a good thing. Now, obviously, people have been paid more, I think that's a good thing, but if wages are increasing but productivity isn't also increasing, that is problematic, and that could potentially be another contributory factor to these inflation fears at the moment. I think when you consider the fact that Bank of England is now warning that inflation could be at 4%, which is twice the target level, obviously much, much lower than it was in the 70s, but twice the target level into the summer of next year, and you look at the number of people in the city who think that this 4% is a bit of an underestimate right now, I don't think the government are wise to be dismissing worries about inflation.
Another thing Boris Johnson appears to be fairly dismissive of as well is working from home.
Yes, this has been one of the key themes, bizarrely, of this conference. We had Jake Berry, former minister, at the start of the conference, saying that civil servants should stop working from home, he said, which was not at all a Labour joke. And Boris Johnson, in his interviews this morning, said that he sort of widened this from civil servants to just general people saying that for younger people in particular, being in the office is really important because it helps them develop, and that if they do work from home, people will gossip behind their back and they'll miss out on opportunities. Then we had Oliver Dowden, former culture secretary, now party chair, again going back to the civil servant attack and saying that civil servants should get off their Pelotons and go back to work.
Was he talking about the Chancellor?
Well, no, he was actually, it seems, talking about his former permanent secretary at the Culture Department, Sarah Healy, who had told a conference recently and got attacked for it in the Daily Mail that she liked working from home because it allowed her to hop on her Peloton when she had time, which is, I think, quite a bold move to attack a civil servant who can't answer back, for one thing, but also slightly odd because Dowden and other ministers recently signed off on plans to reduce the size of their department to the extent that civil servants don't actually have their own desks anymore. And it saves the government money, but it is based on people working from home. And so they're actually relying for these savings on people staying at home while also telling them to come into the office where they don't have a desk. You know, it would be highly unusual if at a party conference people said crowd-pleasing things that didn't make sense. But, you know, perhaps this is one of those instances.
I think one of the things that is intriguing about the working from home debate is that, you know, Boris Johnson is a big... He's always believed that people would want to go back to the office. You know, he's a big believer that the theory of propinquity, and that people want to be, that we are a social species. People want to be in touch with other people, to see other people. And he's always argued that would happen naturally. What's interesting is that there are, they keep quiet about it now because the Tory mood is very much against working from home. But there are actually ministers who think that working from home could be quite useful to the government's agenda, because they argue, look, one of the things you're trying to do in levelling up is, you know, one of Michael Gove's definitions of it is that people don't need to leave the place where they were born to do a good job. Obviously, if you have greater working from home, that expands the opportunities that people have, especially if you can improve digital infrastructure. And, you know, for example, we're in conference in Manchester now. It's possible to think of a whole series of Lancashire towns where it probably wouldn't be realistic to commute into Manchester to Manchester every day from to do a job at a big Manchester firm. But if you were coming into the office, say, 2 days a month, that would be a realistic proposition. And so I think there were some ministers who quietly during the pandemic used to argue, well, look, you know, actually, we've got this levelling up plan, and working from home could be one of the things that gives it a fair wind. It could be a big boost. It could make it easier for that. And it is interesting how that argument at the top of the Tory party has been swept away. The Daily Mail today, which has been a big campaigner for people going back to the offices, is proclaiming that Boris Johnson is basically going to tell Britain to get back to their desks in his conference speech. And it's interesting that the government is moving from a policy of, you know, oh, we'll let people and businesses decide, but we think most people will choose to go back, to a much more active government-led enthusiasm for people going back to the office. You know, and I think that's an interesting development when you consider the other opportunities there could have been for the government in terms of working from home.
It's also interesting, just given that this is a Conservative government and they don't normally like to micromanage, meddle in what businesses are doing, particularly at the level of, you know, where their staff are and all that kind of thing. But all the more striking, I think, given one of the other themes of this week has basically been the Conservatives saying to businesses, no, we're not going to get involved every time you have a problem. For them then to be talking about the location of those businesses' staff's desks is slightly contradictory. Now, I realise, obviously, if you're a pig farmer, you're not going to be shooting your pigs from home this week. So it's a bit of a sort of, you know, side debate for the people who are actually in the real midst of these supply chain issues. But it is still a strange contradiction.
And Isabel, on the subject of Boris Johnson, what's the level of anticipation when it comes to that speech tomorrow? And what is the mood, you know, when looking ahead to Boris Johnson's moment? Has he sparkled lustful at this conference?
Well, Mr. Steerpike on Coffee House thinks not, and suspects the Prime Minister of behaving slightly oddly in various ways, not least the bizarre clips that have been appearing on social media of him drinking a pint with Build Back Better as the caption, which doesn't, I mean, it doesn't even make sense. And then unwrapping some fish and chips, I think, was the other one, which was lovely to see.
That did make me hungry.
It did. Well, it would, I suppose. But yeah, I think there is anticipation, partly because the first couple of days of conference were a policy-free desert in terms of ministers' announcements. I mean, I've for my sins, spent a fair bit of time in the hall, and it's mainly been these bizarre staged panel discussions and Q&As where all the questions are things like, what's the favourite bit of your job as a minister? Which, you know, is really incisive. And ministers, when they have given speeches, haven't really been allowed to announce very much. That's changed a little bit today because we've had Law and Order. So we've had Dominic Raab announcing quite a lot. We have Priti Patel doing lots of different things on immigration, on policing and so on. But I think there is anticipation just that Boris Johnson needs to announce some stuff to signal what he means on various things, not least levelling up, where we haven't really had any announcements at all.
And James, just finally, Isabel mentioned Priti Patel there. What was, you know, the main thrust of her speech? There was a news line involving the Sarah Everard case.
There's going to be an investigation into how that happened. And I think it will start looking at some of the kind of issues of, A, the kind of precise details of what led to this, and then whether flags essentially were missed. And if the police missed them, and I think there is a quite strong case that they did, then what further examination should there be? There's a very interesting story in The Eye today that they've done an interview with Kit Malthouse, the policing minister that sits in both Home Office and Justice, saying that the police have only just started looking at people's social media feeds when they vet them, which seems to me, given how much of life and how many problems become apparent there, it seems to me an odd that it has taken them so long to get on to looking at those kind of things to see if people have problems. I think this is a big question. I mean, whether this is enough to restore confidence, I am uncertain of. At the moment, we have one of those situations which, when you think about it, is even more bizarre. The Metropolitan's advice at the moment to any woman who is attempted to be arrested by a lone police officer is that they should knock on a door until somebody opens it and they can talk to them about it.
Wave at a bus.
I think that is not a sustainable situation to have. I think that there needs to be a far greater grip of this situation. And I think the question is whether, you know, Cressida Dick, who has, you know, had a, to put it mildly, a checkered time at the Metropolitan Police, whether she can actually provide the leadership that you need to try and sort this problem out.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Isabel. And thank you for listening.